This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, especially the joy that comes from sharing that love with someone. Hope you're already anticipating it, already feeling it coming from this Christmas, once again this year. Been doing it for more than 40 years now. I'll be doing the overnight Christmas morning after the midnight mass. I'll be on till 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'll have a friend with me, Mike Aquilina, has been with me for a number of years now. And we're going to talk about Christmas, the meaning of Christmas, and talk with you about some of your best memories. And talk with you about what's happening in our world today and how much more we need to draw closer to God. But tonight, first of all, I'd like to begin a program as we do each week with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. As Jesus sat on the ground, tears flowed uncontrollably down his cheeks. His voice quivered as he spoke out loud, although no one was near enough to hear him. "Why, Father, why?" he asked. "Have I not tried to speak the words you have given to me to speak?" He looked down at the ground, but could not see anything through the blur of tears. The sun was still very bright, very hot, but he did not feel it because his heart seemed to be broken. He was saddened and disillusioned by people's lack of response to his words. Neither did Jesus see the man who was approaching him until his visitor broke the silence and said, "Jesus of Nazareth, I have come to speak to you." Jesus turned his head toward the man, wiped away his tears, sweat, and dirt from his face, and asked, "Who is it that comes to me?" "It is I, Master," the man answered. "Then speak," Jesus responded. "Why are you so sad, Jesus of Nazareth?" the man asked. Jesus answered, "My friend, if you could see or feel my heart, you would know it is broken. For when I speak, I do not believe people are listening to my words. They mock me." And Jesus suddenly was overcome with great emotion. His words stopped, and he emitted a loud sob. Then he said, Woman, the man, the husband, also goes through many trials. He too is filled with fear and joy. He fears the unknown source of your pain and the thought of raising the child, but there is joy in his heart when he sees his son or daughter. Yes, there is much pain, upon the earth. He comes in many ways, in many forms. The pain of oppression, of gossip, the lack of food, friends, or money, and sometimes we seem to bring it on ourselves. But there are also many joys. Through each hurdle, through each problem, you can become a better person, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Have no fear, because pain can be turned into joy. Joy and pain are like the sun and the moon, like the stars in the darkness. Each complements one another. Then Jesus looked down at the food set before him, broke the bread, and said, "Let us share what our Creator has provided for us, and how you have prepared it. Let us be filled with joy." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the introduction to her book titled From Burned Out to Beloved, Soul Care for Wounded Healers. I invite you to join me on a journey that weaves together trauma, research, spiritual practices, addiction recovery, and inner healing. Although I've gained much from others' perspectives, my offerings largely stem from walking through the fire of my own burnout. I don't pretend you are driven by the same struggles or beliefs I have. I'm a white American woman with a master's degree. I acknowledge that my social location and family history impact my paradigm and include explicit and implicit privileges. There are many forms of secondary as well as primary trauma that I've never had to endure. While I hope to share my journey in a way that connects with you, I know that my perspective is limited. I'm still learning. Sometimes I may miss the mark. By God's grace, I hope that you know your beloved self more deeply, establish life-giving rhythms, and are further equipped in recovery from secondary trauma, workaholism, and codependency. I believe that together we can journey toward basing our identity on being God's beloveds instead of on what we do or what others say about us. We can walk together toward freedom and grace instead of in desperation to make a difference. We can learn to love ourselves as we love our neighbors. This is a journey of pride and brokenness, of learning to say no and to ask for help. It is a journey of forgiveness and healing that involves learning to combine contemplation with activism and being without doing, with doing, being with doing. This work is worth it because you are worth it. It is also worth it because as you heal, you become more resilient. Your work will be more sustainable and effective, and you will have the tools and insight to enhance the structures and systems you are part of, fostering environments that encourage others to live sustainably as well. Soul care, S-O-U-L, soul care is not for the faint of heart. Yet to thrive, yet alone survive in this work, soul care is not optional. It is essential. The author of these words, and she's beginning to tell you her own story, is Bethany Dearborn Heiser. She is the director of Soul Care for Northwest Family Life, a network of therapists trained to work with survivors of domestic violence and sexual trauma. As a bilingual social worker, chaplain, and pastor advocate, she has worked in a variety of ministry and social service settings with people affected by addiction, sexual exploitation, incarceration, and immigration. And tonight we are reaching her with her family where they live together in Seattle. Bethany Dearborn Heiser, welcome to Amplify.
Thank you so much for having me.
I loved your book. I'm sure it's helped me, not so much in my life. I've been sort of where you were in the past, thinking you almost that Christ complex, Savior complex, where we think we have to do it all, and we don't think about ourselves as much as we can, don't take about ourselves as we should. And you acknowledge that you aren't exactly sure when your burnout started, but as you looked back, you recognized signs of despair, exhaustion, misplaced guilt, and inadequacy. That's saying a whole lot. And you had worked to assist the employable homeless in finding housing and employment in downtown Seattle. And in your journey, you indicate you were in over your head. Tell us a little bit about the situation of burnout, because there's probably a lot of people today that are experiencing that because of what we're going through.
Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, it seems like it's all too probable and too common right now, with people being overworked and without having resources and connection with others in order to receive care and care for themselves. And you mentioned working downtown. That job was about a year out of college for me. And, you know, I had just basically gotten my own first apartment and my own full-time job. And my job was to help people find housing and employment, people that were often twice my age and who had navigated a lot of challenges. And I was kind of jumped into the work. And I remember hearing story after story, and my eyes were continually open to the challenges that people were facing. My heart was breaking and breaking over and over again. And I had studied, I had researched, I had done a lot of volunteering in college and previous to that. And yet it came so close to home as I worked with people in Seattle. And as I navigated my own privilege and witnessing the various levels of oppression and my inability to change and to fix things and wanting to do more and yet not being able to. So that was, you said early signs, that was kind of one of, I can see signs there, just feeling in over my head of having 60 plus clients, of hearing stories and stories, and the environment that I was working in, and probably my own unhealth, which I talk about later in the book too, but just my own pride at thinking I needed to be strong and capable, and everyone else seems to be handling the traumatic stories that we're witnessing and hearing fine, so I should be fine. And there was just no acknowledgement that we might be affected by the realities we are facing.
Right, because slowly your identity became more and more centered on what you did rather than on who you were. And you were addicted, and beneath her compassion, you write, was a drive, even a need for meaning and for self-worth. And so who or what opened your eyes to the impact your work was having on you and helped you to see that you, and you say it this way, desperately needed help?
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of kind of key players in that journey for me. A number of years after, just a year after I was in that case manager position, I started my master's in social work because I thought I needed more training. That should help, you know, just get more education. And a couple years into the program, a friend encouraged me to take a self-care for social workers class. And again, completely out of touch with how I was being affected, I thought, oh, I'm fine. You know, self-care is probably just exercise and eat well and get good sleep, and I'm fine, I'm good with that, I don't really need that class. And they pushed me and said, no, you know, this one's different, you should really take this. And it was by the class was taught by Laura Vandernoot-Lipsky, who's the author of Trauma Stewardship, and that book has become kind of a widely recommended book because it really digs into the 60 most common responses, she calls them, to secondary trauma or trauma exposure, sometimes called vicarious trauma. And so she really helped connect the dots for me and realize how I was being impacted, and that also I wasn't alone, and it was actually pretty normal to be impacted in the ways that I was being impacted.
Yeah, you thought you were invincible, and there can be a kind of a spiritual aspect to this too, can't there be, in terms of a savior's complex, where you think this is what God is really asking of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about being God's hands and feet in the world, and that, you know, that there's goodness in that, and there's also a burden that can be taken on, a mantle that can be taken on in an unhealthy way, saying, oh, it's all up to me, you know, God is out of the picture, and it's just up to me to help people, and I need to figure out how to do it, and that really became toxic for me.
And you believe that self-care was nothing more than a form of pampering that you couldn't afford or you didn't deserve. What then is God's place in a struggle like this?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like God wooed me repeatedly, calling me to lay down and to rest, and that it wasn't all up to me. And so another key in my story was a couple years after that, I started working at a ministry called Tierra Nueva, means New Earth. And people there really invited me to tune into God, to listen to God. And to I even arrived there feeling like I was a wrung out sponge. Someone had this image for me. And so people kind of helped me awaken a connection with God that was much more personal and conversational, and really helped ground me in a different way of interacting with God, and saying that God loves me no matter what. And yet I yes. still, you know, you've read the book, and I still persisted in my own unhealth. It took a couple other interventions and challenges, but for sure the story of the accompaniment of God in that process, saying, hey, it's not all up to you. You are loved no matter what you do. Was definitely there throughout my journey.
And you have a lot of beautiful quotes in your book. One's from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who said, "We are perfectly loved with a love that requires nothing of us. So we can stop, quote-unquote, being good and live into the goodness that is our essence." God holds out an invitation to us, an invitation to turn away from the anxious striving that has turned stress into a status symbol. It is an invitation to wholeness that leads to flourishing for all of us. And so we're going to be taking our first break, but I want to point out that you don't intend for this book to be a substitute for professional help. In fact, you indicate that some people need to do that, and clergy are oftentimes among them. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be back. I still have a minute. Okay. I sometimes do that. I'm probably burning out here, Bethany. So
acknowledging it is the first step towards recovery.
Yes. Oh, there you go. That's an important point. Sometimes it's I go out at 9:39, or not. You know, instead of let's. It doesn't really matter, does it? Not at this point. But when we come back, let's talk about what is soul care, S-O-U-L, as I said. You fought hard to hold your emotions at bay and receive people's stories with compassion. And prior to your burnout, you worked at two part-time jobs, and many such part-time jobs really aren't that. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Bethany Dearborn Heiser. She's written a book titled From Burned Out to Beloved, subtitled Soul Care for Wounded Healers. During the first part of the program, we talked about how she was addicted. Beneath her compassion was a drive, even a need for meaning and self-worth. She believed that self-care was nothing more than a form of pampering that she couldn't afford or didn't deserve. And there was a time when she knew she had to make a change in her life. She had to address her own mental health, but didn't know what to do. Tell us a little bit then about what is meant by soul care, Bethany.
Yeah, soul care. I started using that phrase as I understood more about what it meant, not just in terms of spiritual care, but really our whole selves, our whole body, that we are interconnected. And you would think that self-care also would refer to the whole self, but it seemed in our culture to come to mean things that we do, in some ways to our bodies or for our bodies, but in a pampering terminology. That's why I use that phrase. And soul care, for me, it was encompassing the holistic, that we need practices and also reframing and to do our own inner work that is sometimes about stopping doing things, but not just the things that we do, but more just our a way of being and a way of rootedness of who we are.
You were overcome by emotional exhaustion and burnout syndrome. And what happens in such a state? You've compared it in the book to altitude sickness.
Yes. In this, I tell a story about hiking in the Himalayas and being impacted by altitude sickness. And there they talk about that people who are fit are actually more susceptible to being affected by altitude sickness because they think they're invincible and they can just keep on going and going and going, and they don't pay attention to the symptoms that they're experiencing or to their bodies. And I think the same is true of burnout, is that if we think we're fine and we don't need care, then we press on until we also might hit a very challenging place and affect our health and have to, in burnout, they say you have to go, or in altitude sickness, sorry, they have to go down to lower elevation. And in burnout, sometimes you have to take a serious break and go down in a different way because of health consequences and just utter exhaustion. And for me, yeah, there was emotional exhaustion. And one of the other signs of burnout is depersonalization and inability to empathize with others. And I felt like I was still empathizing with people, but I didn't want to get to that point of being on the other side of being too hardened and inability to hear people's stories. I took an emergency week off and a break, and then ended up later, after about a year, taking a longer sabbatical of rest.
It was interesting to me when you, among many other professionals, it was noted in a 2018 Leadership Resources article that 1,500 pastors leave the ministry each month. Didn't say each year, each month, due to moral failure, spiritual burnout, or contention in their churches. And then you have a list of questions. What if instead of busyness being the barometer, we encourage one another to work with greater self-awareness and to live grounded and at peace? What if we acknowledged our wounds instead of pretending they don't afflict us? What if we reckoned with how we have experienced oppression or privilege and with how that has diminished our view of ourselves and others? What if we honestly engaged with the internal beliefs and values that distort our self-perception and give ourselves permission to thrive? And this final question, what if we served out of a deep certainty that we and all people are beloved just as we are, regardless of how we change or help others to change. That seems to raise the point that you write about in your book, that we need to stop and explore the deep well of God's presence within us. How do we do that?
That's a good question. I mean, I think part of it is slowing down, and we have such a quick pace and think that more is better, and often even tout that as our success of how busy we are, how exhausted we are. And we need rest. I mean, it's one of the primary commands that God gives us, is taking a Sabbath rest. And you know, in Psalm 23, I love that it says, he makes us lie down by still waters, that sometimes we need to stop. We need to have time of reflection and of stillness and of prayer that isn't about doing and about accomplishing. We need to reorient our perspective, that, like I said before, that it's not all up to us. Right. And even that posture of Sabbath and of resting each day is embodying that, is giving that as an example that, hey, God moves outside of me and it's not all up to me.
Yes, you point out that self-care reaches a point when it seems like just one more thing to do and there's no time to do it. And you don't really think about the importance, and we don't stop to think about the support we need to enhance our own sense of worth. We just talked a little bit about self-care, and some of the central soul care ideas that you bring up in the book are: we are beloved children of God. Our inner beliefs and perceptions affect our care for others and ourselves. As we work with people in the midst of trauma, taking care of ourselves, it's not optional, it's essential. And then finally, being rooted in God and practicing holistic soul care benefits us as well as those around us. How does it benefit those around us?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that every day. I have two little kids, and even if I get 10 minutes of quiet, of centering prayer for myself, that I am better able to be present, to be patient, to be grounded and in who I am, and more engaged with my kids. And I also have experienced that in the work that I do, that if I know that I'm beloved, not for what I do, not for how I'm perceived or how people like me or approve of what I'm doing or how well I'm helping them, then I have a better discernment lens of what my response should be. I'm more free to say no if I need to say no, instead of to please somebody, or to say maybe, or to say tomorrow. And I'm not living out of my need for impact or out of my need to impress. And I'm living knowing that I'm already loved no matter what.
You've said in many other different words, we can become addicted to busyness. We need to become productive. We don't allow ourselves to stop. And you point out that it could take as much as a year to recover after burning out. And one of the tools that has helped you is centering prayer. What is centering prayer, and how has it helped you?
Yeah, centering prayer was developed by Father Thomas Keating. He was a priest and started contemplative outreach. And they talk about centering prayer as, you know, recommended for 20 minutes of sitting in stillness and choosing a sacred word that can ground you, and being still and opening yourself up to the presence of God with you. And as your mind drifts, which is a very normal reality for all of us, to gently come back to that word or phrase, and to practice, be still and know that God is God. And really without much more purpose than that, but just to be present to God. And I think for me, as someone who likes to do and to feel like I'm accomplishing and to make progress, it's been a really helpful practice to slow down and to say, there's no more purpose than lying on, sometimes I lie on my floor, on my back, yes, and being still in the presence of God. that is good in and of itself, and that is what I need, and that is what I want right now. And sometimes it doesn't feel like, you know, much happens, but I think there's a goodness for that too, that I can just receive what is in that time, and to know that God is with me, that I'm held by God, and loved by God, no matter what I'm doing or not doing.
Yes.
It's also just the practice of stopping and of that we were just talking about and saying that I'm loved without any productivity.
And Father Keating was a guest on this program years ago, a couple of times. I can remember that. Having regular prayer practices is not a new concept. You write, when I take time for a daily practice, I'm reoriented to the truth of my belovedness that you just talked about. I feel less anxious, more clear-headed, and better able to make thoughtful decisions, not based on what others think of me. I respond with more grace to others and myself. I'm able to love myself more fully because I know God loves me. Seeing myself in God's eyes and receiving God's love from me helps me to extend it to others. I remember that I'm not important to God because God can work through me and help more people. I'm valued because God cares about me, my work, my relationships, my well-being. I live knowing I am loved instead of striving to be loved. Being the beloved changes everything. And so you indicate that God whispered to your heart, Bethany, you don't need to feel guilty for taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the core of my journey, and obviously the title of the book is From Burned Out to Beloved, because recognizing that has to be the core of our changing, of our recovery path, that I needed to know, and every day I need to know that I'm beloved by God, no matter what. And it's still a challenge for me to come back to that place and to know that no matter what, I am loved. And as you mentioned, the pastors and the people that are burning out, you know, what if we really did live out of that place, knowing that we are loved? Just try to imagine sometimes, how would I live differently if I really knew 100% that I was the beloved one?
Right. So you write that what we do doesn't give us additional worth. God does not use us. We are called friends, not servants. We need to let ourselves be loved, even though we are not perfect. And so you have various exercises in the book also that are very helpful. You ask us to spend some time listening to God prayerfully, asking questions. What is your identity and worth based on? Who tries to define you? How does this affect how you take care of yourself and interact with others or with God? Consider asking God, how does God see and feel about you? When you think about God, what do you feel? And finally, how has your view of God sees you impacted your sense of calling? Boy, if you can begin to answer those questions, you can really begin to turn your life around, can't you?
Yeah, I think that so many of us, especially in helping professions, want to be, are there because we care about other people and we want to make a difference. We want to help other people, and to say that we don't have it together or we're in need of help can feel like weakness.
Yes.
And when we make mistakes or when we disappoint people and we're not as successful as we want to be. And so to say that, hey, yes, we want to make a difference. We want to help people. And yet we are loved no matter what, really can change our perspective and change our orientation and help us to receive people for where they're at instead of trying to get them to where we want them to be.
And you write about the concept of wounded healers, that when acknowledged, mm-hmm. our wounds can be vessels for healing, that our greatest burden can become the source of our greatest gift, whether we know it or not. How we listen and speak is often impacted by what is going on within us. So the whole concept of wounded healers is so important. Secondary trauma. You write that trauma affects our capacity to make sense of the world, that overwhelming our senses and wrecking our previous understanding of the worlds, ourselves, and often God. I hear the little one there. If you need to take care of her, feel free to do that. And extending grace to ourselves is essential, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Yeah, we mean to be the recipients of grace. You know, that word, Father Langman, has taken on so much more meaning and richness for me, that the grace that God offers us really flies in the face of our own striving and is that gift that we get to receive daily. I mean, I did Ignatian spiritual exercises in daily life last year, and they talk about asking at the end of the day for the grace you need for the next day, and just that daily reminder that we need grace every day in a real tangible and life-giving practice.
And a part of your busyness was because you didn't want to slow down long enough to think about the stories and tragedies that you had faced in life. And you write that if we think we're struggling because of our limited capacity or inabilities, we're likely to blame ourselves if we burn out, and that becomes what is called compassion fatigue. Tell us a little bit about compassion fatigue.
Yeah, compassion fatigue is the exhaustion of repeatedly hearing traumatic stories and faced, and the drain of and the almost the inability then to continue to engage empathetically and in a present way to other people. So that can happen not just in workplace settings, but anyone can experience compassion fatigue, but kind of a repeated attempt at being present to other people or being present to other people in their suffering and the toll that has over time. So for me, hearing story after story of women who had experienced domestic violence and trafficking, as well as families facing immigration challenges and being separated, it took its toll on me. I asked that author of Trauma Stewardship, Laura Vandenitlipsky, how do you not accumulate trauma? I just felt like the stories were accumulating inside of me and I was being filled with them, and it was affecting how I was interacting with others and how I was seeing the world.
And you write that we minimize our suffering compared to others. If we feel guilty for taking time off, we don't take time off, and as a result, risk burning out. And guilt doesn't help anyone. It negatively affects not only us, but also others. And you write, I had fallen into a trap of believing that I don't deserve to enjoy goodness. A lot of people, that's an underlying difficulty, isn't it? They're maybe not even consciously aware of it, but they just don't believe they deserve any goodness. And you write that in being fully and truly ourselves, we don't take away from others. In fact, we may help others know that goodness is possible. And one of the things we have to overcome is believing that you can never do enough, because you can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there's a challenge there, right? Because there's a scarcity of resources, and yet there's not a scarcity of joy and of goodness and of love. And so to think that if I have less goodness in my life, if I don't enjoy my weekend away, if I feel burdened in a time of rest for myself, then right. that equips me to better help those who I will see when I go back to work or meet outside or
Bethany,
when I'm going to the jail.
Okay, I need to break in. We're going to take this break and we'll be back.
Okay, sounds good.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.